Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
When I found out I was going to be a parent, I immediately felt a lot of anxiety and worry. So I went on to BetterHelp to try to look for a therapist to help me with that.
My relationship with my family and with my boyfriend and with myself were suffering. I really needed help.
I was ruminating a lot. Really getting those thoughts out to a therapist and getting feedback was just life-changing.
If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, visit BetterHelp.com/stuff today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/stuff.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, and there's Charles W., Chuck Bryant, and Jerry's here, and this is Stuff You Should Know, the Triple Alliance coming at ya, but not overstepping our bounds, being very delicate here.
Correct.
Because that's how you do it.
Yes, the Triple Alliance.
Yeah. I think that was actually the proper name for the Aztecs.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. All right. Did you know that?
No, but I like that, you know, hopefully this episode is coming out and we're getting some guest listeners who are like, what is this NATO thing all about? Ooh, who are these dum-dums? They can explain it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I like you lobbing out in a little factoid for everyone.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's how we do. We tread lightly, we don't overstep our bounds, and we lob out factoids.
So welcome. This is Stuff You Should Know. My name is Chuck, and I'm the co-host along with Josh Clark.
Yeah, hi.
And we explain things in a semi-humorous way over the course of, you know, a lot of podcasts do this every episode. They explain what their mission statement
I would go berserk, man. I would have giant patches in my head of where I've just pulled hair clean out.
But we like to explain things in an approachable way to the common person. That is to say, that is what we are. We don't have lofty goals.
There you go. Wow, did you write that one down? That was amazing.
Yeah, we should do this every time and just let me wing it every time.
Okay. I think we just came up with a new format in 22.
Woohoo!
So, Chuck, we're talking about NATO, and if you didn't know, we're in trouble. But if you, the listener, especially the new ones, didn't know, NATO stands for the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, mm-hmm. which is the kind of name that you can make your eyes glaze over with just one pass. It's that boring sounding, right?
Yeah, but it's a pretty, I mean, I don't know, maybe this is an opinion of my own, but I think it's pretty fundamentally integral body to mm-hmm. the world order.
I mean, it's certainly proved itself as such. Yeah. And, you know, we're Americans, we were kind of raised to think like NATO's fine and great and it's a good thing. Don't even bother thinking about it unless we need you to. And if so, we'll alert you through the media and then you can start thinking about it. But if you dig into it a little bit and you actually like look at the stuff that it does, the stuff that it has done, the reasons it was founded and the reasons it's operating now, it actually does make a tremendous amount of sense if you're a fan of democracy, you know?
Sure.
Even if you're not a fan of military operations— which I mean, I would rather everything just be at peace. It would be great if we could do everything through diplomacy, right?
Sure. But
so even if you're not like, yeah, we got to go get them, let's just get over there and shoot everybody, you could still be like a supporter of NATO just because of the stability it does provide, like you were saying, or has provided all this time. In recent stuff with Ukraine and Russia has definitely made me rethink it in a more positive light and that it's more essential than I thought it was.
Yeah, and we'll get into that obviously along the way in this episode and sort of explain what's going on in some detail. But I also just the idea that NATO is outdated and of a bygone era and mm-hmm. not useful and a waste of money mm-hmm. is, I think, folly, and we're not going to go down that road too much. We're just going to probably explain how it works and hopefully through that display why it's still necessary.
The thing is, Chuck, is that particular opinion of NATO wasn't necessarily wrong a year ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago. And it's not like you and I just woke up to the importance of NATO.
Right.
Literally, the world has changed in the last 2 months since Russia invaded Ukraine. And NATO, which was struggling to find its way, its purpose up until about 2014, when the last time Russia invaded Ukraine, suddenly became like important and had a reason to exist again. So things have changed that dramatically that a 30-nation allegiance, an organization that had been kind of like, what are you guys doing again? What's the point of all this? Was now one of the most important organizations in the entire world again.
Well, yeah, and I think there's a lesson in complacency there. It's like if you had this old panic room installed in your house in the 70s.
Yeah.
And you know, here in 2022, you're like, you know what? This panic room, I think I'm just going to turn it into a bingo hall. It's getting kind of useless. And then all of a sudden, the purge happens.
Right.
And you remember why you needed that panic room.
Yeah. So the purge happened to Ukraine in February of this year.
But the purge was always just sitting out there, possibly could happen. And I guess that's the complacency I'm talking about. I think no one thought anything like, oh, everything's fine these days. Like, Europe's not going to be at war. We don't need this stuff.
Yeah.
And then, but that possibility was always out there. And I think just the mere, and this isn't me, this is, you know, highly respected people say that just the mere mention of exiting NATO and dissolving NATO emboldened people like Putin.
Yes. So what sucks is like, the idea that we're living in a world where NATO is essential, where that the purge is kind of always out there, it didn't necessarily be that way. And if you're uncomfortable living in that kind of reality, if you're like, this reality actually sucks, that the purge is out there and we have to have NATO now and we have to spend all this extra money on defense and all this stuff, and you know, peace seems to be, you know, up in arms and in question again. Blame the people who invade other countries. Don't blame the people who have allied to fight against that kind of thing in the name of democracy.
Well said, sir. Should we go back to the beginning?
Yeah, let's talk about the history of NATO, because it's a fairly young organization, comparatively speaking. Like, if you compare it to, you know, systems of writing, it's very young. Right.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Or the sun?
Sure. Very, very young.
Uh-huh. So let's go back in time. I guess we should jump in the old Wayback Machine. Oh, crank nice. It up. It's been a while.
You're showing off for the new people, huh?
I know. We have a Wayback Machine, and we can go back in time. So take that. April 4th, 1949 is when the North Atlantic Treaty was signed, initially by the the OGs, the 12 founding member countries, which were ourselves here in the United States, Canada, our hat to the north.
Hey, wait a minute. I like that you're adding a little bit to each one, but can you sing it as a song?
No, I can't. Okay. Oh, shoot. I just did. Did you hear that?
I did.
Where else? The United Kingdom, our friends across the pond. Mm-hmm. France, those folks who make such good gravies. Mm-hmm. Italy, which is all about those pillowy, beautiful, what are they called?
Croissants?
No. Well, sure. But I was thinking of the pasta that's the gnocchi.
Oh, yeah. That's not pillowy. It's dense. It's dense as night.
I like a pillowy gnocchi.
I don't think that's gnocchi. I think that's like...
No, a pillowy gnocchi is delicious. You've been Your gnocchi's too dense.
Isn't gnocchi stuffed with something, though?
Gnocchi?
Oh, I'm thinking of pierogies.
Portugal, delicious wines.
Sure.
Norway, I hear they bike a lot over there. Denmark, they bike even more. Iceland is not Greenland. People get those confused. Mm-hmm. Belgium, I've been there, and that's where NATO is headquartered. We'll get to that. The Netherlands, they are largely below sea level. And then Luxembourg, I flew out of there once. It's very small.
It is extremely small. And I've been to Belgium too, by the way.
Belgium's nice. And then you got Greece and Turkey in 52, West Germany in 55, Spain in 82, And then in 1991, when the Soviet Union collapsed, it was like a free-for-all of people and countries going, oh, me, over the next 18 years.
Yeah, and NATO was saying, yes, come, be friends, come become democracies. This is great for us. And that was, and we'll talk about it, kind of considered, there's a guy named James Stavridis. He was the Supreme Allied Commander of NATO from 2009 to 2013. And he put it as that was kind of the beginning of NATO 2.0. But NATO 1.0, the original mission of NATO, was very clear. It was very purposeful. It was very complicated in execution, and it required tons of money, especially considering there were only 12 to 16 members from 1949 to 1982, right? Mm-hmm. And the mission was contain the Soviet Union, because yeah. After World War II, Europe was just toe up from the flow up.
It was
and it yeah. was up for grabs. And one of the first things the Soviet Union did was start pouring all of its economy into its military
yeah.
and saying, okay, you're part of the Soviet Union now. You're part of the Soviet Union now. You're part of the Soviet Union now. And they drew what every 80s kid knew was a line between Europe and the Eastern Bloc called the Iron Curtain.
That's right.
And you did not penetrate the Iron Curtain. The Iron Curtain penetrated you.
All right, Yakov Smirnov.
Thank you. I'm glad you got that.
That is true. And the one of the biggest parts of NATO that's sort of one of the most fundamental parts of it is Article 5, which we won't read in full. You should go look it up online, though, and read it. But it basically
But we
says,
could sing it.
It basically says, you know what? These are all – like NATO isn't a military force. It is a bunch of countries and their military forces – and it's really up to each member to decide what they want to do when it comes to supporting an ally. Like, you don't have to use military force. You can, though, under international law. But you basically – it's up to each country. It's a weird organization in that they don't vote on things. It's all just sort of hammered out as a consensus, mm-hmm. Including who the NATO Secretary General is. They don't even vote on that. They just sort of agree to who's going to take that role, and which will, you know, we'll get to what they do later. But it is – I did find it fascinating that they don't, you know, they don't sit down. I mean, how many countries are there now? 30?
30.
They don't sit down and have a 30-country vote when it comes to anything. They just work it out. That means sometimes some countries are going to get more of what they want and sometimes they're going to have to acquiesce and get less.
Yeah, which I find kind of neat. But overall, most of the countries are in favor of doing whatever NATO's doing
yeah.
or they're opposed to it and NATO doesn't do something.
Right.
So that Article 5, the basis of it, is what's called collective defense. And the main tenet of this, and this is the thing that probably binds more than anything else the 30 countries that are members of NATO, is that if you attack one NATO country, you are effectively attacking all 30 NATO countries.
Yeah, that's and why they don't get attacked.
Those 30 NATO countries will bring their substantial, significant military might onto you, the attacker who attacked that one country. That's ultimately the main and original purpose of NATO. Because when NATO was formed and Russia was consolidating its military, Europe was not, the countries of Europe were in no shape to defend themselves. So they entered into this pact with the United States and Canada, who said, we'll come over and help you guys. And by the way, Soviet Union, I hope you're listening. If you attack any of these guys, if you try to expand beyond that Iron Curtain, we're coming in. Like, it's an attack on us. That was the basis of NATO. And it's been upheld ever since. Although it's only been invoked once in the history since 1949.
Yeah, and not only does that mean that these countries aren't getting attacked, which has been pretty ironclad, mm-hmm. it means that other countries, like obviously in 1991, like I said, with the fall of the Soviet Union, over the next 18 years are scrambling to be a part of it because a lot of these are smaller countries who no way could they stand up to a superpower like Russia.
Right.
So they want to be in NATO, and we'll talk about Ukraine and their, you know, whether or not their desire was to be a part of NATO and where that kind of lies now with the current situation. But the point is, these countries like Slovenia and Albania and Croatia and Montenegro, like, they want to be a part of NATO because they need friends.
Well, they do need friends because, yeah, if there was Russian aggression against them, they would just completely, they would have no choice. I don't even think they could fight back in the way that Ukraine did. Some of these countries are so small.
No way.
And have such small militaries. So, yeah. So right now, as it stands, as far as Article 5 is concerned, if any country attacks North Macedonia to the United States military, it is attacking the United States. That's just
right.
Part of the NATO treaty, right? And that's a point of contention from what I saw, Chuck, that some people are like, okay, are we really going to send our troops over to, like, die in North Macedonia if Russia attacks it? And as far as Article 5 is concerned, yeah, you would. Like, you would do that. Like, that's part of the treaty. Like, they are a NATO member nation. And to some people, it doesn't make sense that you would sacrifice, you know, blood and treasure, as they say, in North Macedonia. To other people, it's exactly sensible because if North Macedonia is a NATO country, you can put whatever missiles you want in North Macedonia. They're a NATO country. And so they're strategically located, and their strategic location makes them extraordinarily valuable as a NATO member. So it makes sense in some ways. It doesn't make sense in other ways. But overall, the general idea is that the more NATO countries you have in Europe, the stronger the whole thing is, even including the little countries. Everybody has a role to play.
Well, yeah, and not only that, you know, the little countries, if you might think it's not worth expending all this kind of money to help and, you know, maybe American soldiers' lives to protect them, the dominoes can fall very quickly. When you have somebody like Putin in power, and the world wants, most of the world wants peace, and that can very easily be very tenuous if these little smaller countries start falling like dominoes, and all of a sudden you look up and the world map is being redrawn.
Right, exactly. So that's exactly what they're trying to prevent by stringing together this cohesive group of NATO countries, right? On the other hand, if you are in Russia and you're in the Russian military, or say you're the head of Russia, when you see all these little countries that are along your border now suddenly saying, we're a democracy and we're now NATO members and we can put missiles aimed at you, like right along your border, that's a huge menace to you. And that in some ways explains the aggression that Putin carried out in Ukraine, among some observers. That's not, that hasn't been as necessarily the stated goal of the invasion of Ukraine, but a lot of Russian experts say this actually is a huge response to NATO. He doesn't want to bring Ukraine into the Russian Federation necessarily.
Right. I remember when this started a few weeks ago, Emily, who was my wife, if you're new to the show, she gets mentioned occasionally. Josh has a wife named Yumi. She gets mentioned occasionally.
Hey, Yumi.
We also have pets. I have a daughter. They might pop up as well, but I doubt it.
My pet is my daughter.
And they, Emily was just like, why, what is, you know, she didn't really understand what was going on at first. She said, what does Russia want with Ukraine? Mm-hmm. And I just very simply, because it's more complex than that, but I was basically like, it's like the oldest reason in world history. It's land. And it's a big chunk of land, and where it sits next to Russia strategically is like, it's troublesome for them to have NATO interests there, and it's troublesome for NATO to have Russian interests there. So it's funny, like when you look back, or not funny, it's sad, but when you look back at, like, there are many reasons for war, but like one of the biggest ones has always just been land acquisition and holdings.
Yeah, totally. And usually along your border, and you just expand.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like expanding the empire before for like resources and stuff, and I think that still clearly goes on. But it also, in this case, is like wanting a buffer between NATO and Russia on the one hand.
Right. Should we take a break?
Yeah, let's take a break.
So we'll be right back, and we'll talk a little bit about some of the mess that NATO 2.0 was in, which led us to NATO 3.0. Stuff you should know.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on. Hey, friends, did you know that it's estimated that 85% of all customer service interactions are automated?
Yeah, it's true, and customers are the lifeblood of all business. So you probably don't want to put that responsibility in the hands of a robot. And that's why thousands of business owners call Ruby and hire them.
That's right. Ruby is the virtual receptionist company who screens, transfers, and takes messages 24/7, all while making your customers feel special.
Yep, you definitely don't want to hire a subpar front desk person. And with Ruby, they engage with your callers in a conversational way, just like your best employee would.
That's right. Finding someone who cares about your business as much as you do feels impossible at times, but the team at Ruby are experts in providing the best customer experience and turn every ring into a relationship.
Yep, this year can be your best year yet. Small, efficient changes can make a huge impact on your bottom line.
That's right, and Ruby answers all of your calls live from right here in the U.S. They'll take messages, answer questions, route calls, and much more. Visit ruby.com, or better yet, give them a call at 844-900-RUBY.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today. Hey, everybody. If you're building a deck at work and you want to supercharge it, check out Canva presentations. Work docs have been the same for too long, but Canva docs are different. They're visual. They grab readers' attention with images, charts, tables, and videos playable right in the doc. Plus, docs don't have to be just words on a page. You can make your docs pop with Canva docs.
That's right. And Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, HR, ops, marketing, and more, Canva presentations can be the solution for you. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it.
Canva presentations might be the most visually impressive presentations you'll ever use. You start with a stunning template, use it as a springboard for your design, adding images, graphics, charts, data visualizations, all from a massive media library. It's super easy to wow any audience with Canva presentations.
So start designing today at canva.com, designed for work. That's canva.com.
Learning stuff with joy.
Okay, so we're back, and we're talking about what, again, Supreme Allied Commander James Stavridis called, and I think Time Magazine, like 2018, NATO 2.0. And NATO 2.0 came about because the whole purpose of NATO, which was to contain the Soviet Union out of Europe, became pointless because there was no Soviet Union anymore after 1991, I believe, the USSR broke up, right? And on the one hand, when it first happened, Chuck, it was like you were saying, like all of these former Russian satellite states started scrambling to become part of NATO, and NATO was welcoming them with open arms. And that first part of that NATO 2.0, that second general point of NATO, made a lot of sense. And it was consolidating Europe into an even more peaceful, more democratic area. But then after that kind of stabilized and they got that process underway, it started to kind of like lose its point or its purpose a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think post-Cold War, the complacency set in and people did start to think, like, what are we doing? And NATO 2.0 said, well, you know what? We can engage in counterterrorism campaigns. We don't like the piracy that's going around the world, so we can help to combat that. And we can get involved in these other in combating these other activities that are detrimental to world order and world peace. Mm-hmm. But this is kind of some of the stuff that not only did it cause some consternation in the citizens of the world, like, what are we doing here with NATO? It was also within NATO. There was a lot of infighting within the board of, like, what, you know, or the council, should I say, what should we do? I don't think we should be doing this. We should be doing this. And since they have to hammer everything out and agree, even sometimes to disagree in order to do something, it was a little bit fractured on the interior.
Yeah, big time, because a lot of people are like, what the heck does combating piracy in the Gulf of Aden have to do with protecting Europe from the USSR?
Right.
You know, the Cold War is over. What are we doing? Like, yeah, let's keep NATO together, because who knows what's going to be needed, but do we need to engage in this adventurism? And then the Supreme Allied Commander position, which is the head of all NATO forces, that is, like, by nature in the treaty, I think, always an American. So the Americans always de facto, and also in a lot of different ways, really lead NATO. But in the early 2000s, America squandered a lot of its credibility, a lot of its legitimacy in adventurism, like invading Iraq unprovoked, illegally. Which, by the way, NATO had nothing to do with, because the rest of the NATO nations, or most of the other NATO nations, were like, this is not right. We're not going anywhere near it, which is a mark in NATO's favor, if you ask me, that they saw, like, this is not a just war. This is an invasion. But that kind of stuff, like, really kind of made other member nations kind of question American leadership, whereas up to that point, or a little before that point, it was just like America was leading the way, NATO was following, and it was all good. And then after that, things started to really kind of fracture and crack.
Right. So this is sort of when Ukraine comes into the picture, in that you don't have to be a NATO member to deal with NATO and to work with NATO and to reap a lot of the benefits of NATO. So they can partner with non-NATO countries. This started back in 91 with the dissolution of the Soviet Union. And the goal here is to basically to arm people, to train people, to ensure their democracy stays stable. And, you know, when that started happening, non-NATO countries got interested in this kind of partnership, specifically Bosnia and Herzegovina, Georgia, and Ukraine. So all of a sudden, these in the early 90s, these other countries are knocking on the door saying, hey, we don't want to be members, because they can. You can join. Any European country can join NATO, mm-hmm. as long as they, you know, do what's required, which we'll get to that in a minute. But Ukraine has been working with them through what's called the Comprehensive Assistance Package. They've been receiving NATO support. And this is the kind of thing that, you know, Zelensky has... A lot of this quagmire that is happening now is Russia was afraid that they were officially going to join NATO because Zelensky approved the national security strategy, which it was almost like they were seriously kicking the tires on one another finally.
Yeah, I think he said in September of 2020 that Ukraine's aim was to become a full member of NATO after being a partner for, you know, three decades, basically, or at least two full decades. And even before that, the whole thing kind of kicked off. There was a summit in Bucharest called the Bucharest Summit in 2008. And at that meeting, Georgia and Ukraine declared that it was their aim to become NATO members. And that seems to be, at least geopolitically speaking, what kind of kicked the tensions off big time and led to the 2014 invasion of Ukraine and Crimea, and then also led to the 2022 invasion that's going on right now.
That's right. A little more nuts and bolts about NATO itself. They are, like we said at the beginning, they're headquartered in Brussels. And everything's done by consensus. And you mentioned the military part of NATO. It's different. It's called the Military Committee. It's different than the actual North Atlantic Council. Like, that's headed by the NATO Secretary General, and it's not a figurehead position, but they're not in charge of, like, deciding anything. They're just sort of they're the Secretary General. They head up the meetings. They have historically always been European, and the head of the Military Committee has always been American, like you said, but mm-hmm. there's nothing in the charter that says that has to be the case.
Right.
It's just always been that way. So they're there in Belgium, and they're taking meetings every day and you know, answering the bat phone when it rings. And then you've got your Military Committee, and then you've got your – what's the other one? The nuclear Planning Group. And I guess the military is sort of the link between all of these to make sure, you know, the military strategy is sound.
Yeah, because NATO likes to publicize itself as both a military and a political organization, and it definitely is. Like, if you partner with NATO as a partner country, or if you're a member, like, you're engaged with them politically, and they try to work things out diplomatically. Like, very famously, one of the first post-Cold War missions that NATO embarked on was in the Balkans when war broke out there in the former Yugoslavian states, right? Back in the Wag the Dog era. You remember that?
The Wag the Dog era, of course.
Yeah. Okay. So do you remember in the movie Wag the Dog?
Sure.
Okay. So that happened basically in real life. It was such a close resemblance to it that I remember a reporter asking Bill Clinton, like, have you ever seen the movie Wag the Dog? Because the Balkan NATO mission started like right as the Monica Lewinsky scandal was heating up.
And he said, it depends on what your definition of scene is.
That's right. Man, we're going to be able to tee off on that guy forever, huh?
Yeah. We'll just got that great voice.
So NATO entered the Balkans and tried to like work everything out. It was a peacekeeping mission, but there was also obviously a lot of military operations. That's how they kept the peace. But even still, there's an ongoing Balkan mission there, and they're trying to sort out the longstanding hostility and promote democracy in these groups. So they are a political organization, but they're also really at the end of the day they're military. Just the incredible. Unrivaled might of the military, combined military powers of the 30 countries involved in NATO, it's you just can't really look at it too many other ways. It's a huge military.
That's right. And as far as the main committee goes, or the main council, it is headed, each country has their own ambassador. I think we got a new one in 2021. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
What's her name?
Julianne Smith.
Smith. I want to say Julianne Moore.
Yep.
Just because, boy, she would be great at that.
Sure.
We need more actors in roles like this, right?
For sure. Actors have proven to be amazing politicians over the years.
That's right. An actor would never like get up on stage at the Oscars and hit somebody.
Man, I'm so disturbed and just unsettled by that.
It's very surreal. I was actually not going to watch the Oscars this year because I'm kind of over it, but for some reason I watched. So I saw it live.
Wow, that must have been surreal.
I was just like, I think like everyone else thought it was a bit at first. And then when here in the United States, the audio cut out and it was clear from Chris Rock when he came back, I was like, oh boy, did I just see what I think I saw?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I was telling Yumi I couldn't find a clip with it, but I wanted to see or hear the ham-fisted way the conductor in the orchestra tried to play everything back out, you know, from the weird, uncomfortable, awkward silence that just gripped the entire auditorium. I want to know how they got out of that awkward silence, because I'll bet it was equally awkward.
Well, they didn't. He had to give out, he was right in the middle of giving out an award.
Oh, so he had to continue on after that?
Yes, dude. It was, that joke was before he even started giving out the award, you know, when they go up there and just make jokes.
Man.
So, I mean, that was one of the saddest things, is that he gave out the award for best documentary to Questlove for his awesome documentary, Summer of Soul.
Oh, man.
And so, like, all of a sudden, like, his moment is overshadowed. Geez, what a train wreck.
Yeah.
Anyway, off topic. Hey, that's something we do sometimes, folks. We take tangents. Should we talk a little bit about the funding of NATO?
I don't think you can get around that, Chuck. Just try. Oh, wait, yeah. No. Let's talk about one other thing. So where we are today before we hit funding, okay?
Okay.
So we're at Supreme Allied Commander James Stavridis. And if you can't tell, I like saying Supreme Allied Commander, you're not paying close enough attention. Mm-hmm. But what he calls NATO 3.0.
Right.
Because he's into cybersecurity, I guess. And NATO 3.0 is where we are today. And like I was saying, you know, there's been a lot of talk and movement toward NATO expansion. And some Russia experts are saying, you know, that's one of the main drivers or one of the big drivers for these invasions of Ukraine that have taken place over the last, like, less than 10 years. But that aggression in response to NATO expansion, or mm-hmm. depending on how you take it, just straight up Russian aggression. Like, it doesn't matter if NATO is talking about bringing Ukraine on and helping it become a democracy.
Yeah.
You don't go waste a city. You don't waste a country. You don't gun down civilians. You don't bomb a theater where you know hundreds of civilians are hiding out. You
yeah.
don't do that. There's no justification for it. And, you know, damn you to hell for doing it, whoever you are. So that kind of aggression has actually now, like we were saying at the beginning of the episode, changed the world order so dramatically that it's revived NATO. Like all of that bickering,
yeah.
all of the inner ally, you know, dissent and troubles and like what's our purpose, all of that has been just pushed right to the back. And all of a sudden, Europe and America are friends again. Europe is friends with one another again. And NATO is probably stronger than it has been in the last 30 years, thanks to, ironically, Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I've read a lot about this, and that doesn't seem to be like a controversial hot take.
No.
It seems to be fairly indisputable that NATO is as allied and as together as it's been in decades.
And it couldn't have come at a better time because, you know, I don't know if you noticed or not, but democracy itself has been kind of under assault. And people were wondering, is the U.S. up to the task of taking
right.
that on? Is Europe up to the task of taking that on? And one of the main tenets of NATO is promoting democracy, not just around the world, but within its own countries, its own
yeah.
member nations.
Yeah.
Since 1949, a lot of countries have had some kind of weird times that it's gone through where NATO has had to basically call those countries out. I think Turkey most recently, where it said, hey,
yeah.
you're a NATO member. We expect you to uphold democracy and democratic values, right?
Yes.
So it promotes it not just around the world, but among member nations. And that's a huge, important point. And so this strengthening of NATO and thus the strengthening of belief and placing value in the idea of democracy and a willingness to defend democracy could not have come at a more vital time. So in that sense, thank you, Vladimir Putin. It's just a shame and very sad that that had to come at the expense of the people of Ukraine.
Agreed. So maybe we should take the break now and we'll come back and talk about that funding, previously mentioned funding, right after this. Stuff you should know.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on. Hey friends, did you know that it's estimated that 85% of all customer service interactions are automated?
Yeah, it's true, and customers are the lifeblood of all business. So you probably don't want to put that responsibility in the hands of a robot. And that's why thousands of business owners call Ruby and hire them.
That's right. Ruby is the virtual receptionist company who screens, transfers, and takes messages 24/7, all while making your customers feel special.
Yep, you definitely don't want to hire a subpar front desk person. And with Ruby, they engage with your callers in a conversational way, just like your best employee would.
That's right. Finding someone who cares about your business as much as you do feels impossible at times, but the team at Ruby are experts in providing the best customer experience and turn every ring into a relationship.
Yep, this year can be your best year yet. Small, efficient changes can make a huge impact on your bottom line.
That's right, and Ruby answers all of your calls live from right here in the U.S. They'll take messages, answer questions, route calls, and much more. Visit ruby.com, or better yet, give them a call at 844-900-RUBY.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today. Hey, everybody. If you're building a deck at work and you want to supercharge it, check out Canva Presentations. Work docs have been the same for too long, but Canva docs are different. They're visual. They grab readers' attention with images, charts, tables, and videos playable right in the doc. Plus, docs don't have to be just words on a page. You can make your docs pop with Canva docs.
That's right. And Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, HR, ops, marketing, and more, Canva presentations can be the solution for you. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it.
Canva presentations might be the most visually impressive presentations you'll ever use. You start with a stunning template, use it as a springboard for your design, adding images, graphics, charts, data visualizations, all from a massive media library. It's super easy to wow any audience with Canva presentations.
So start designing today at canva.com, designed for work. That's canva.com.
Learning stuff with joy.
All right. So the aforementioned NATO funding, and by the way, thanks to our former colleagues at HowStuffWorks.com for the original NATO article that kind of started us down this road. But there's a lot of misconceptions about NATO funding and how that works. The official guidelines say that member nations are expected to commit a minimum of 2% of their GDP, their gross domestic product, to spending on defense. But because like I said, NATO, it's not loosey-goosey, but it's not like someone checks the books every year and then goes to Luxembourg and says, hi, you actually spent this and this is what you owe. So if you could just get the checkbook out and make that up right now, that would be fantastic. There's no penalty. That's not how it works. I think in 2014, only three members spent 2% of their GDP or more on defense. I think the U.S. spends about 3.5%. Is that the most recent number?
As of 2021.
Right. And everyone in NATO has basically said, though, all right, we get it. We'll try and up our spending, and we would like to meet that goal in the next couple of years here by 2024.
Yeah, because again, as NATO was like, what are we doing here again? That really led to a big decline in military spending and that huge increase in military spending among European nations of recent years has largely been because of Vladimir Putin rattling his saber and then actually following through on it. But one thing, Chuck, that I think is really like important that's a misconception is we don't contribute 3.5% of our GDP to NATO.
No.
A lot of people think that. The requirement is that you as a nation spend 2% on your own nation's defense.
Yes.
And then because you're all tethered together through this invisible alliance of NATO, NATO combined has access to those 30 member nations' defense, all what those defense budgets buy, which when you add it all up is extremely substantial, both in amount spent, but also in like what you get for that kind of money.
Yeah, I do think that some people might think that everyone chips in this money to NATO and that there are NATO forces and stuff like that. That's not how it works. NATO's, we do contribute to run NATO with their, you know, with their own budget, but that's about $2 billion to, and that's just day-to-day operations and, you know, logistics and operations and keeping the headquarters nice and tidy.
Sure.
Clean. Someone's got to clean those bathrooms. That's not a lot of money though, but that 2%, right, is spending on your own military. It's actually apportioned out in the original, I guess, charter. Is that what you say? Or the original agreement?
The treaty.
The what?
The treaty.
Yeah, the treaty.
It's right there. That's what I'm saying. It's so boring.
It is.
It's hard to even pay attention to. I keep wanting to find
a better name. Apportionment for the United States, our cost share is 22% here in the U.S. If you look at our GDP, it's about the same size as the other 27 nations put together. So it's not based on like how big an economy you have, because then we would be, our apportionment would be about 50%, but it's 22%.
Yeah, that makes sense. Right. It does make sense. That's just for chipping into that $2 billion that keeps NATO operational ready at all times. That's
right.
Not
a drop in the bucket for us.
It is. And so the U.S. is, you know, far and away, we spend on defense, I think, almost three times more than the other NATO nations combined. So we spent about $811 billion in 2021, and the rest of the NATO allies spent a combined $363 billion from, I think, the UK's $59.2 billion down to North Macedonia's $108 million. But if you look at proportion of GDP, there are plenty of nations who go beyond that 2%. Like Greece actually spends more of its GDP by percentage on defense than the United States does. We spend 3.5%. Greece spends 3.82%. Croatia is 2.79%. The UK is 2.29%. Poland is 2.1%. So plenty of nations have started topping that, but that is a fairly new thing.
Yeah, like you just can't look at NATO as a 30-item balance sheet and say, well, this is a bad deal because I'm looking at 30 different numbers of what these countries contribute. It's much more complex than that. You have to look at it relative to the size of the nation and their economies and overall spending. It's frustrating. That's
for sure.
All I'm going to say.
No, it really is. But when you add it all up, what you have is a combined in 2021 $1.174 trillion among the NATO allies spent
in total
on defense.
Spending? Yeah.
That comes to 3.5 million troops who are committed to NATO's alliance. 3.5 million troops.
Yeah.
And just that dollar amount alone, by the way, $1.174 trillion, that's basically more than the rest of the world combined. And just the NATO allies, the non-U.S. NATO allies spending is more than China and Russia's defense budgets combined. So yeah. It's substantial, not to mention that three NATO members are nuclear powers, allied, together. Like, so when you put all that stuff together, the idea of NATO, like, being this stabilizing force in global security makes total sense. It doesn't even have to do anything. It just has to exist to keep things stable and to promote democracy around the world and to reach out to like formerly non-democratic countries and say, hey, here's how you become democratic. Here are the values. Let's see if you can stick to them if you want to become a NATO member just from this kind of defense spending. It's kind of ingenious in a way.
Well, it is. And I think it's part of just modern society to get complacent about our memories are so short these days, I think, and there's so little acknowledgement and realization of like the history of the world and not just like the last 30 to 50 years. You know, there's been peace in Europe for about 70 years now. And that's all anyone, you know, that's all most people remember unless you're like in your 80s, probably. You know what I'm saying?
Right. That was, like, that's how it's been.
Previous to that, there were a couple of millennia of war in Europe. And like the fact that NATO, and I think, I mean, not singly NATO, but I think NATO has been the biggest driver of ensuring that peace over the last seven decades.
Yeah, I mean, you're not the only one. Like, pretty much global security experts will say, yes, NATO has kept the world order stable for that long, basically as long as it's been around.
I think it's just sad that I think the short-term memory of how kind of people are today.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you know, the Cold War's over. Do we really need this stuff anymore?
Yeah, but I mean, it's tough to blame people because, again, it's like the world you grew up in. It's the world you were born in. And then just the relief of like, wow, democracy actually won. We actually did it. We can just relax for once for a little while. It was funny, Chuck. I was thinking today, there are plenty of people who I'm sure listen to our podcast who've never lived under the threat of nuclear attack and now for the first time in their life.
Yeah.
And I've settled back into it like it's an old smoking jacket and some comfy slippers, you know, like this is just like normal stuff to me. And I realized, like, I wonder how many people out there are super anxious about that idea of dying in a nuclear attack. And all I can say is you get used to it.
You do. You get used to doing drills in school where you would go get under your desk
or in the hallway,
duck and cover, because that would do a lot in the case of a nuclear bomb.
Right.
Or, you know, watching Matthew Broderick bring us back from the brink of nuclear war.
What a hero.
What a movie.
So, Chuck, we should probably, before we finish, we should probably talk about the future of Ukraine and NATO, because as we've said a few times here, you know, Ukraine making moves toward becoming a NATO member and being like in deep cahoots with NATO has created this situation, at least in part, where Russia's feeling like emboldened about invading Ukraine to either put a stop to that or whatever Putin's saying he's doing. So if you've been paying attention to the news, Volodymyr Zelensky has been saying like, okay, we're willing to maybe start talking about neutrality now.
Yeah.
And what he's talking about has almost everything to do with NATO, right?
Yeah. I mean, neutrality isn't just a something like just say, oh, you know, we're neutral. We just don't feel that strongly about anything over here.
Right.
That's not what it means. Neutrality in terms of the world order, I believe it means you don't get involved in a third country's problem.
It doesn't mean you're like a nihilist, Lebowski.
What was that?
That was my flea.
Okay. It won the lingonberry pancakes. Neutrality means you won't get involved in a third country's issues. Isn't that right?
Totally. Yeah. No matter what. Like, so you wouldn't join NATO. You wouldn't send arms. You wouldn't do anything like that. Which, by the way, I mean, since we said Ukraine is a partner country, they're just getting a steady flow of arms through Poland from NATO allies. And it's been super effective from what I saw, because Russia is a tank-based military. And the anti-tank weaponry that we've been sending Ukraine and Ukraine's been using to great effect has actually stalled 100,000 Russian troops from taking over Ukraine, which everybody thought was going to happen in a matter of days. Now they're finally backing off of Kyiv. It's just insane to even say it out loud. But under neutrality, there would be no arms going from NATO to Ukraine.
Yeah.
Russia would not be allowed to invade Ukraine. Ukraine would be what Finland is. Finland has a huge amount of border that it shares with Russia. And it serves as a buffer state between Europe and Russia. It's not allied with Russia. It's not allied with Europe. Finland's just its own jam. The proposal on the table now is that Ukraine become like the southern Finland. It'll be a neutral state. It'll be its own sovereign democracy. It can do whatever it wants, but it can't join NATO. And it's not going to be allied with Russia, not after this invasion or ever, because of its neutrality status.
Yeah, and I think the idea at first is that people thought, and it may have been the case, that Russia wanted to absorb Ukraine as part of building back a maybe not a new Soviet Union, but just expanding Russia. Mm-hmm. And that may have been the case. I don't know. But I think the last few weeks, it's become clear that that's not possible, and that, like, occupation of Ukraine isn't possible, like long-term occupation.
Yeah.
So it seems like neutrality may be the only way forward here. For both sides.
Yeah, definitely. I guess, I mean, yeah, it's, you, like, I can't imagine how difficult occupying Ukraine would be for Russia, like, over any period of time.
I don't think they have enough troops to do that.
No. And I mean, the Ukrainians certainly have the will to resist for as long as they need to get Russia out of there. So, yeah, it's I feel like now that seems to be, I think we read an Al Jazeera article on it, right?
Yeah, it was super interesting. They talked a lot about how, you know, not all pro-Russian sentiment in Ukraine has been dissolved, because there was some, mm-hmm. obviously, but this has done a lot of damage to that.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure anybody who is on the fence before is like, okay, I'm not pro-Russian or even considering pro-Russian anymore. But the it does seem to be that, and this is, you know, obviously up to Ukraine, but if Zelensky is making gestures and overtures saying we're willing to talk about neutrality, it seems like that could be their decision. But again, global security experts, at least ones that were quoted in Al Jazeera, are saying, like, this is actually probably the most viable and quick short-term or like at-hand solution to ending this invasion and actually stabilizing things again for a while.
That's right. That article, by the way, is Ukraine, What does neutrality mean and could it lead to peace, from Thomas O. Falk? And that was just from a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, and in addition to How Stuff Works in the Al Jazeera article, we got stuff from Brookings, the Brennan Center, Time, BBC, and a bunch of other ones, too.
And so, Sesame Street.
This is definitely one of the you is for up yours. And this is one of those definite moments in history that it's worth paying attention to. So if this episode struck your fancy at all, go read up on it, because there's a lot of really interesting and important stuff to read. Literally, the world has changed in the last couple months more than it has in years. Since 2001, I would say.
Since 2001.
You got anything else?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, if you want to know more about NATO, you can go check that out online. And since I said check that out online, everybody, it's time for listener mail.
That's right. I thought, why not? Let's read one from a brand new listener.
Oh, nice.
This is the first episode they listened to, and I have foretold the future with this email.
Wowee.
Just kidding. Hey, guys, last week, though... I found out about your podcast, and I'm loving it. I've become tired of the radio, so decided to start looking at podcasts for my work commute, and yours caught my eye as it looked interesting, without being too heavy, educational, but not as depressing as the news. Perfect.
Nice.
Okay. I was waiting for a response.
Well, I mean, yeah. Nice was my response. Okay. I like it. I'll take it.
You two make a great pair and work off each other seamlessly. Mm-hmm. When I listen, I cannot help but think of you two as a mashup of Bert and Ernie and SNL's The Delicious Dish with Anna Gasteyer and Molly Shannon.
So I will respond to that part, because that is probably the greatest description anyone's ever come up with for
take
us.
Take it. Yeah. Sweaty balls. I mean that in the most complimentary way, by the way. I love it, and it works so darn well, obviously, since the show is going strong for years now. Oh, thank you for noticing. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to reach out and say thanks for saving me from boring radio and crazy news and helping my mind grow while being entertained. And that is from Samantha Burns Maloney.
Well, thanks, Samantha. We really appreciate that. That was a great email. Seriously, the best descriptor I've ever heard.
I like
for
it.
For sure. Yeah. If you're new to the podcast, or you're a long timer, or you email every week, we want to hear from you. You can send us an email to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Childproofing people's homes is hard, but Duracell is making it just a bit simpler. Not only are they committed to educating parents, caregivers, and medical professionals about the importance of battery safety, they make the only lithium coin batteries with a non-toxic bitter coating to help discourage children from swallowing them. Duracell even features child-secure packaging designed to avoid accidental opening. Learn more at Duracell.com/power safely. Available on 2032, 2025, and 2016 sizes.